Whoa, we are here today at another episode of The Intersection, at the intersection of technology and culture, and we're all about community here. So I have a very special guest today who is super focused on community. Maddie Wong is the founder of Founders Cafe, an online group of founders who help support each other in their business endeavors, a monthly membership in exchange for a support network to help grow your business. Maddie made over $60,000 as like a 13-year-old on off a Minecraft server she ran, and made over 120K off of an Amazon store when she was 19. And went on to build an undergrad co-study community called Sesame during COVID. And then Maddie ended up dropping out of Stanford to build the Founders Cafe community she works on today. It's made up of a bunch of founders from Y Combinator, Stanford, Harvard, and consists of multiple founders that have exited companies and founders who've raised millions through their businesses after joining Founders Cafe. I know Maddie because I joined Founders Cafe for a bit when we were in the midst of trying to raise money for Light Pong. She's also 22, like me. Welcome to The Intersection, Maddie. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Wow, thank you so much. I'm actually 24 now.
Oh, whoops. Well, so I don't know why I read that somewhere online. Well, thanks. Thanks for joining.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm super happy to be here.
So, bring us back to the moment when you were debating about dropping out of Stanford, and what about building Founders Cafe felt like the right thing to do?
Yeah, so at Stanford, my goal was to find out what I'm passionate about and also find people that I really loved at Stanford. So that was kind of my goal of going to college. So I think right before I dropped out, I was building this other startup called Queer Chart. And during that time at Stanford, like, I launched this like massive queer community. It basically was like Stanford's gaydar and told you, oh my god, my roommate's queer. Or, like, oh my god, my housemate's queer. Oh my god, let me go get a lunch. And so that was how I started to meet so many queer people, including my girlfriend, and get extremely interested in community again. And so I decided to take like a gap quarter to build another startup with my girlfriend and my best friend. But what happened was it started out like pretty chill and like, you know, doing coding every day. And then like a huge co-founder explosion happened and I was like, fuck. And so I was a solo founder for that co-studying app for the rest of the year. And right before, originally I was just going to go back to school. I'm like, oh no, like the startup isn't getting the traction I want, so I'm probably gonna go back. But then I met another founder and he helped me decide to pivot to Founders Cafe. And like within a month, I got like 40 like paying customers and it was so exciting. I was like, holy shit, like, okay, I have my girlfriend. I have some amazing friends from Stanford. Oh my God, I have an idea that has like real traction. I don't want to give that up. And like I found basically, I was like, if I go back, then I like lose this opportunity to continue pursuing something I love. So it became an easy decision when I had traction. Yeah.
How do you think you quantify, not quantify, but how do you like, what is the value of community and how do you show for it?
Oh yeah. Through storytelling. So for example, when another member, Sarah, first joined, she was 2 months into her startup. She was a solo founder and she was like very lost. Like she didn't even know what go-to-market was. And so like a month in, she met Rishi who, so they talked about like LOIs, for example. Sarah was like, I'm just letting my users use my product and, you know, like for free. And if they like it, I assume they'll pay later. And Rishi was like, that's the wrong way to think about it. Actually, you should get them to pay up front before you start building anything. And she's like, what? And he was like, yeah, the standard practice called LOIs, especially in B2B SaaS. And she was like, what? And so she implemented these learnings the next day and asked all her customers to sign an LOI. And they were like, sure. And then she was able to like bring that all that LOI data back to her potential investors. And they were like, holy shit, she signed so many deals now. Like, let me go invest. But before, she was just like, she wouldn't have been able to like get there without like this really good advice from other members.
Speaking of that, you often talk about this big lesson you learned to not be afraid to ask people to pay for what you've built as early as possible. You don't give out free trials, do you? Or tell us more.
Yeah. So really early on in my previous startup, I, like Sarah, thought that I would just let people use my product for free. And if it's good enough, then people will pay. So I waited a whole year to ask people, hey, is it good enough? Will you pay? And the overwhelming answer was no. And so I had just realized, whoa, I just spent a whole year building something people wouldn't pay for. Wow. But now, so I actually did beta test a little with like free trials, no free trials. And you know what happened? So in the beginning of Founders Cafe, I did offer a few free trials for people who asked for it. And what happened was those kinds of people join and then either just do nothing because they have no skin in the game, or they would join and they would just extract everything the community has to offer and then like churn right before the free trial ended. Kind of like what we do for like, you know, Netflix free trials and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to be attracting those kind of members. And so I started only doing like subscription-based pricing. And I noticed when people like the people who joined, they were like hella fucking committed. And they're like from day one, like engaging, talking on Discord. Like before for Founders Cafe, I was attracting like students and stuff who were looking for the free trial. But really my target customer is like someone who is like 30 plus. They just left their job. They're full time on their startup. That is like, but I wouldn't have realized that if I just continued doing that free shit. If you can't sell that today, what makes you think you're going to sell that like 10 years from now? That means there's just not enough demand.
Maddie's lesson. Stop doing that free shit. I'll quote you for that. I'm really curious of how you view like community as a product.
Community as a product. Yeah, so I think at heart where most people find value and what is important in creating community as a product is creating those like those connections. So yeah, so like when people first join, my job is to like give them like these like five like fire ass intros and just really try to tee them up for like lifelong friends or like investors and stuff so that they get a value immediately. Because the worst thing you do in a community is join and then no one cares about you. Like you like don't, maybe you like talk to one person, but they don't care. The best thing you do is you join and people are like, holy shit, like Matt, what's up? And then you build so many connections and you build that inner security and it's like fucking awesome. So yeah. For the cohort itself, so something that I found really fascinating among all like the successful Founders Cafe users is that they were able to get pilot customers or like time to revenue was super fast. So as soon as Sarah got that advice, she just implemented it and started getting customers immediately. Whereas I know like for others, maybe it's just like really scary to like start selling, really scary to ask people to do LOIs. And it is scary to like, you like, oh, will you pay me $2,000 right now? Like, that's scary. And so what I'm hoping through this like structured learning is to pass on all of the learnings from the successful members over to the new people so they can just get that soaked in. And for the ones who are just like go-getters, they will just implement that ASAP, like implement that within a week and then start getting the paying customers and then start the flywheel of success. So I don't want people to have to wait like 2 months, 3 months to find the right connection that will help them realize I need to get revenue now. I want them to get that within the first week. And so I don't have control over the kinds of people they meet. I mean, I have some control. I like set up the intros, but I don't have control over like what they learn. But what I can control is, oh shit, I'm gonna pass all these learnings on, no free shit. And like in this live call, you're gonna literally ask each other to pay $2,000 for something, and you're gonna see how it feels, and you're gonna like, yeah, like learn a lot from that and feel confident enough to do that for your own audience.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Based on some of this research I did on you, it seems like you have this kind of thesis that what founders initially need to kickstart their business, that they often confide in other co-founder relationships for, can be fulfilled through a founders community like yours.
Oh, so, yeah, I'm hot takes.
Do you believe that if more solo founders had a founders cafe type community, that they wouldn't really need a co-founder?
Absolutely. Here's why. So when I, like a year ago, I went through like 7 co-founders. And why did I go through that? It's because I felt like the startup journey is just too hard, is one, and to do it alone. And second one is, like, I was shit at product and sales. And so, like, I spent the whole year running through 7 random co-founders, and that was horrible. And so what instead I started to do was, okay, the reason why I don't feel good enough to do this alone is because I don't have sales skills, product skills, and I don't have support. So I'm like, okay, well, what if I just, like, filled those two needs? And so for product skills, and I started like reading all these books and learning how to spin sell, and started practicing selling to live customers. And that helped me get like, you know, the first 40 customers. And then the second thing is, oh shit, I don't have support. Okay, let me like, and this is when I started to like really invest in Founders Cafe. And this is when I really started to like develop my own like really tight knit like founder friends. And so that both of them like really helped me. And now like I don't want a co-founder. Like I have literally no desire. Like it feels so good to do things like alone. So for those who are wondering like, oh, should I get a co-founder? So the question I would ask is like, why don't you feel good enough to do it alone? Like, do you want the validation or like the emotional support? Do you want investors to feel like you're credible? And so for the emotional support, yeah, joining any founders community is really helpful. For investor validation, I'd actually suggest to like read up on the solo founder studies. Like I think 60% of solo founders are actually more successful in the long term than co-founders. And also like, okay, Sarah, for example, she was a solo founder. She raised like $1.4 million, and now she just raised $7.5 million, and she was like a solo founder. So I've seen a lot of success. So it's not, so instead of focusing on, oh, I need a co-founder to get VC validation, perhaps it's really, I need traction to get validation. So it's very interesting stuff.
Interesting. Well, how do you feel about the people who are like, I just need more like execution support?
Oh, then you can hire minions. You can hire VAs. I have VAs. They're literally the most amazing thing ever. Yeah.
So in that case, do you think it's an issue of like the validation and the funding part? Because once you have funding and validation, then you can just hire minions if you know what you're doing?
Yeah, exactly. So again, it goes back to paying customers. If you can get I think any founder can get their first 10 paying customers completely alone. And so if you're able to do that, you need more execution power. Well, you already have revenue, so you can push that into hiring someone short, like part time. So yeah, that's what I would recommend. But it all stems on the fact that your thing can get paying customers, if that makes sense. If your thing can get paying customers, then you can get traction and like appease the VCs. Then you can get execution power. Then you can also like, well, you can just join a founders community and stuff for the support. But yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Once you get paying customers and pretty much that kind of solves everything else. You're in Japan right now. What are you doing there?
Yeah, I'm doing the whole like digital nomad thing, remote work thing.
How's it going?
Oh my god, it's so good. It's okay, so before I stayed in Stanford with my girlfriend, and we kind of did like the same thing every single day, and I felt like my personal growth just was like chilling. But here, like surrounded by so many like different people and different ideas, like the growth is just like yeah, but this is more like of a personal journey, and also just getting to explore new places. The world is very interesting.
What else? Can you tell us about this Minecraft server you made? Because, like, I was just imagining if I was 13 and I made, like, that much money off a Minecraft server. At that age, I was just the one playing Minecraft and hoping that I didn't have to pay on the server. So tell us about that whole... That's so interesting to me.
Yeah, so when I was growing up, I had a tiger mom, and I felt like I had very little control or agency over my life. So like when I was like, I don't know, 12, like I started playing Minecraft and I met like so many cool people, and I'm like, oh, maybe we should make a server together. And so we did. And it was really exciting to just go from like school, which was like horrible for me, and then talk to my mom, which was horrible, but then to have like a safe haven where people could just connect. The server ended up growing like bigger and bigger, and like I started monetizing it because I didn't want to pay for the server bills, and so people were purchasing like VIP, MVP, virtual ranks, and it was like really an exciting time because like that's when I realized, wow, like entrepreneurship like is like a way out, like way out of just feeling powerless every day. And also like community is like a way to like really build a connection when I had none in school or with my family. And so I think that's why I'm so obsessed with community, because make money, make connection. That's pretty fucking cool.
It is. What did you, do you remember what you spent money on when you started making it for Minecraft?
Oh yeah. So I spent it on, okay. So I remember I was like, oh my God, like, I'm so cool. Like, I have money in my PayPal. And I remember I went to like this random like geek online website, and I bought like a monkey blanket and silly putty and like a hat that said winter is coming. And I'm like, oh, so cool. Game of Thrones. And so I like rolled up to school with all this random gear, and like no one gave a shit. And also I was like, my silly putty that I bought is drying up. And so that's kind of when I realized, oh, buying random stuff is not for me. So just saving the rest and investing it back into the business.
Yeah. Really? You at 13, you were like, oh man, random stuff isn't the way. I got to invest this back into the business. That's a profound learning for a 13-year-old. I feel like I would have started buying all type of like, I don't know, katanas. I was really into swords. I would browse swords online when I was 13. So then when you were 19, you built this Amazon, like, I don't, it wasn't drop shipping, was it? Like, what was the...
Oh, yeah. So it was called Amazon FBA. So how it works is you buy a ton of stuff from China, you white label it to have your brand on it, it goes into the Amazon warehouse, and now consumers look up, like, phone car mount, and they see like your product and they just buy it. And so here's the thing, I did try drop shipping, and what I learned was that was really hard to acquire a single customer, like really hard. Like I had to pay like $40 to have them make a purchase. Like that's a lot. But on Amazon, the first day I uploaded my listing, some random person bought it, even though it literally had no reviews. And I was like, wow. Holy shit. And so from there, it became like a race, I guess, to get to the front page and get like a shitload of sales, get all my friends to review it. And once we got to the first page, people were just buying it organically, and like there was no ad spend. It was like the cost of acquiring customers just like almost nothing. So Amazon was really nice about it's really nice because they brought all the demand in and I didn't have to do anything.
Interesting. That's so cool. Do you remember feeling like you were mentioning this earlier, the sense of empowerment that entrepreneurship gave you, that at a young age you kind of like maybe in your family life you felt constrained and suddenly you had this agency that you were like, oh, okay, I can do stuff in the world now. So what was that process like for you going through that?
It was really hard because my mom just saw me as like a lonely like middle school, high schooler who had not many friends in school, and she thought that if she like cut down on the computer time, then maybe I would try to make more friends at school. And so every and like get better grades. So every night we'd like fight and she'd like turn off the Wi-Fi or hide the laptop. But that made things even worse for me. And like it made it even more like important to keep my server running, to make it better. It became like a lifeline almost. 'Cause if I didn't have this, then what would I have? I'd have nothing. I don't know how to get power on my own or feel it inside me. I don't know how I did. I tried to set boundaries with my mom, but they weren't respected. So, like, I didn't. Yeah. So, like, yeah. So, I think, yeah, Minecraft really. Yeah. I had a sense of agency and that I can make impact on people. And if I'm struggling with something, I can build things to, like, help solve my problem and others. So, I think from then, I was the grind. I was like, I'm
That's
going to
so
be
cool.
stronger. Yeah.
That's really admirable because you didn't give up. Like, almost it almost reminds me of a generic startup story. Like, you had this opposing force that felt like it was holding you down, and you just stuck to the mission, almost as if Minecraft was like a venture.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, exactly. I think the worst part was when my mom smashed my laptop, and I think that's when I like pulled out my PayPal and started like buying a new one. But I don't know, it's
Wait,
really
what?
hard. Yeah.
Whoa, that's such a cool moment.
Yeah, it was
That's empowerment right there. Like, boom. Like your normal 13-year-old, they get their laptop smashed and then they're done, they're toast. But you had money. See?
Yeah. Felt very good to be able to meet my needs without like needing my mom and stuff. Yeah.
That's like inspirational.
I don't know, since then, like I remember I tried working in like Facebook and stuff, and I just felt like why am I working here when I could be just like working on my own vision and my own interests? And so it kind of gave me that like I don't know if it's ego or whatever, but it's just I'm gonna die someday, and I don't want to be living my life in an environment that I don't feel like I'm in power and control, because then I just live my life for someone else. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone wants to live that way. That's beautiful. You want to you it seems like you've been working on community for a while because not only are you doing all this Founders Cafe stuff, but even when you were working on Sesame and Queer Chart, these are their own like forms of community.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So I kind of want to hear about your how you learned about community through those experiences.
Yeah, so for a community, like on the more practical side, for example, when I launched Queer Chart, the queer social network, I first spent like 2 months just building out the platform and then pushing it out, and I had a huge party with all the queer women, and they had to like enter their emails to join the party. And so I sent an email after and said, "Hey, join the platform, join the community." And a bunch of people joined. They like used it for a bit, and then over time, everything just dropped. And so that made me feel like, "Whoa, I think I did something," or "I don't know if I used my time efficiently." And it made me realize, holy shit, community doesn't start with some random platform. It starts with the people. And so the next time around for this queer community, I tried it a different way. I started saying, starting with a mission, oh, I'm trying to make as many queer people like meet each other as possible on campus. And then I used existing platforms like Slack to build out the first iteration. In that whole Slack, like so many people got in relationships. Two of my friends even got in relationships just from like a freaking
Slack
community. Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah. And so like compared to the first platform where I'm like, ooh, let me do code stuff and then ship and launch. This is probably like the amount of impact / queer connections made. But the Slack group, it's actually like up here. Like so nuts. So
interesting.
For how that changed the way I was doing Founders Cafe was, it made me start like on using Discord. Like, oh, my goal is to help founders grow and also meet lifelong founder friends. And so likewise, I didn't start building out some like lunch club algorithm or like some cool new website, but I started on Discord. Yeah. And it achieved the goal that I was setting out, and that was really helpful. So if anything, it's like the reversal. Instead of building the product and crap first, using existing solutions to further the kind of purpose you're serving and taking in feedback to like improve that. Maybe in the next 2 years or 3 years, I realize there's so many limitations of Discord. We need like a specific platform, but that actually is not the case. Like, it's pretty fine. Yeah.
That's fascinating because sometimes you hear that people will use these existing platforms like Discord or email list or whatever, Slack, as like a MVP. But you're saying that even when you were building things, just using these existing tools like had way more impact anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Way more impact because it was better built in the end. Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. So I guess that's an awesome lesson. Like, reconsider if you really even need to build anything. Like, truly just test your stuff with what exists if you feel like it has value.
Yeah, exactly. Just assume that existing tools will give people an 8 out of 10 experience. And whatever value you're adding, you can always add on top and create that a 10 out of 10 experience. Don't assume that existing tools is like 1 out of 10 and like whatever you build is 10 out of 10. That's what I assumed. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's an awesome point. I love that. So I guess to wrap this up, where do you think Founders Cafe is headed? Like, what's in the horizon? How do you feel right now where you are at this moment in life doing what you're doing with Founders Cafe? And then what's the future look like?
Yeah, I think I feel proud because it took a lot of effort to get where I like am today, and also just grateful for all the people who supported me in my journey. I think going forwards, I am really curious about exploring how to even further build connection within communities is one. And the second thing is how to pass all those learnings, all the successful people got over to them. So I'm curious how to like merge both things. So people feel like they've grown a lot and they also have strong ass connections and then they can build like a badass company. So yeah, so that's kind of what I'm experimenting with these next few months. Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Oh, how can people contact you?
My Twitter is @lesbianbezos.
Why Bezos?
I like girls and I like to make money.
What? I'm waiting for you to continue.
Oh, that also I have, you can email me at Maddie, M-A-D-D-I-E, @founderscafe.io. So both of those work.
Thanks for watching or listening if you made it this far. If you want to get in touch with Maddie, her contact info is in the description, as well as my own.